Okay. Ooh, really?
It's a heck of a read.
Okay, so buckle up. How many pages is this?
All right.
I don't know. I'm only about halfway through it, and I've been reading for a while.
I don't know if I can.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and plow through the rest of it. All right, we're going to go ahead and start. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mayor, Council members. Chief Mark Rooley, you're going to talk along with the rest of the team. The fire chief and the community development director will be helping me out talking about group homes. And I'm just going to pass around for us to take one. It's a fact sheet. We created that some time ago for the community members who have at times some consternation about group homes or congregate care facilities that are in their neighborhoods. And so we try to message out what we can and can't do and get facts out to them. My goal here today is a group effort because I am certainly not all things group homes. There's a lot that I don't know about them, and I think as a team we should be able to get most of the questions answered. The goal is here through 7-8 slides is to give you a snapshot in time of some base information of what a group home or a congregate care facility is, how many are in the city, and what kind of resources are we spending on these. So with that, I will move forward. So one thing we generically call these group homes, and that probably is not, that's kind of like an earmark, I guess, it's not the right term. The real term we should be referring to them as congregate living facilities. That is the appropriate term. They're most commonly called group homes. It really describes a variety of settings that in our community that serve vulnerable adults and children with a variety of disabilities. Commonly, group homes refers to adult foster care settings that are licensed by the Minnesota Department of Human Services in Hennepin County. And another, a lot, sometimes you hear the term is assisted living facilities, and these are licensed by Minnesota Department of Health through the state. So one other definition I think it's good to know is the embedded social worker. When I use that term, an embedded social worker is a social worker or a senior social worker from the county that's assigned to the police department to take referrals directly from the police and then provide support to our community members. So congregate living homes in Brooklyn Park, depending on what data you look at, and that's only because you can kind of get in the weeds of what actually is a congregate care facility, but we have something close to 404. I know community development can come up with about 437 if they look at some different criteria, but within the police department data, we have 404. There's 265 different companies that own these facilities in Brooklyn Park. I think probably the big one there to know is who is the most common owner is the for-profit limited liability company. So these are companies that are for-profit that have these facilities and provide the service. One thing, put this map on the side is for council members to kind of see a snapshot of where these are located throughout our community. One concern that community members often bring to me, and I know they bring it to council members, is they feel like their specific neighborhood has too many, they're too close together, and they feel maybe that the state is congregating in any certain area. And while we do have examples of that on specific streets, I have to be honest, they're pretty well spread out through our whole community when you look at the 404 facilities. Calls for service. So regarding police, this is mostly police, but anything you see that has like the mental or the pain, those would definitely include fire, and the chief can weigh in on as well, because the fire department goes to all medicals, and we do have a lot of just calls for service at these facilities. I think a couple things from the slide I want you to take away is the continued trend that we last year in 2021, so we had 2,548, and then 2022 we had 3,159 police calls to 404 facilities. The trend that I have continued to see is we are growing about 500 or 600 mental health calls a year across the city, and we're seeing that certainly in our group homes or our congregate care facilities. And then on the right-hand side, year after year, those top eight calls are the same top eight for these care facilities. So this is what we're going to, and that's just a straight-up mental health call. So somebody that's either in crisis or experienced mental health, and we're going to talk about that more when we get to the alternative response team, which is up and running in Brook Park. But a welfare check means somebody's called in and said this person's not doing well. Could be a resident, could be a caregiver on site. Disturbance, that just generally means that a neighbor or there's been some sort of unknown problem where it's disturbing the peace. And then assist police, which is a miscellaneous assist. That's actually a lot of fire calls go to them as well. And a lot of those are like lift assists where people aren't necessarily medical need, but they need assistance because they fell out of bed and aren't able to get back in. Or it can also be a lot of generic just police service calls. And then missing person, we do have quite a few walkaways from group home facilities. I will just make mention on that, that those are an incredible time consumer for my staff. We treat them as missing people, which means that we start immediate investigation, we search the area. A lot of times these people are have special needs of some sort, which make them vulnerable and easily victimized, which gives us concern. So we pour a lot of resources. So even though we're only looking around 100, and, you know, in 2022 we had 131 of these missing persons, it often requires an investigator. If it's in the middle of the night, that means investigators getting called in from home to try to locate them, depending on the circumstances. So those are really big time consumers. And then the rest calls kind of just are interchangeable, but the top eight are very, very common calls to these facilities year after year. When we talk about actual crime that occurs at these care facilities, it's relatively low. So we're talking about 311 crimes out of the little over 3,000 calls that we go to, which is definitely low. The type of crimes you can see there most commonly would be a simple assault. Then you get kind of into the damage to property or theft of motor vehicle, those kind of things. The only thing I give Kim credit for pointing this out, she asked me when she looked at this, so yeah, we have 311 crimes, but you got to consider like that's out of 400 facilities. And you look at like 17,000 houses that we have in the city. That is pretty proportionately a high number of crimes that are occurring in a low number of actual homes. But relatively, that is actually, and because the crimes are generally very low level, to be honest with you, they don't consume a ton of resources. Mental health unit and how they deal with congregate living response. So our mental health unit involves numerous social workers and a detective from the police department. They have been assigned out 885 cases. That's really close to, I mean, it's climbing every year, but we'll definitely pass that if we stay on the path that we're on in 23. It's higher than we were in 2021. So about 885 cases that team is responding to that involves congregate living facilities. So they're doing a lot of really great work. One concern I have is the level, the need in our community and the need across the state and the need across the nation of mental health calls is going up so rapidly that we can't even measure our effect. We're trying to measure recidivism. So can we reduce the times that we have to go back and help somebody, right? If we get them the right care, the right medication, the right what? If we get it to them, we know that we don't have to go back as often. The problem is the need is going through the roof, and I think that's really why some of the council members in this room are hearing from neighbors and community members saying, like, why do I see so many group homes coming into our residential area? And the truth is, there's just a growing need that the market's trying to keep up with. So one thing we're looking at here when I talk about recidivism, like, we're trying to always, at the mental health unit, one of the metrics that I want them to look at is, like, we want to provide the right service at the right time to the person so we don't have to so they don't need to call 911 or somebody doesn't have to call 911 on them again. And that's really what we're measuring up there is how many times are we going to the same address or dealing with the same person at some of these facilities. The alternative response team, so this is really new, so it started in December of 2022. This is a pilot project that we took on with Hennepin County Behavioral Health. We did a lot of research before. What was really nice to hear is the county came to us knowing that we have historically been very responsive to new programs, looking for creative ways to serve the community members in Brooklyn Park. And they said that, you know, with our opportunities, they wanted to partner with this co-responder type model. We really started to travel across the country and found this model in Denver, Colorado, this alternative response team. And it doesn't even involve the police. And this, I really am becoming an incredible believer in this. So this unit is a community paramedic who specializes in this work, but really understands medications and the medical side of it. And that's paired with a social worker who really understands the psychology of it. And those two are in a van. They're on the police radio, and they're stationed out of our police building. So they're in that van, and they work from 10 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. Again, this is just a pilot. And they get dispatched out to calls from the dispatcher on the police radio for things that don't have a crime and things that are not dangerous. And we did a lot of vetting, actually about 7 months worth of vetting police calls to really hone in on the right calls for them to go to. They take about 12 calls a week right now. Well, I think there's actually another. Yeah, here it is. So far they've had 139 calls through February, the end of February. And this is where officers would have gone to these 139 calls. So we would have sent the police to this call prior to December, and the police would have had to deal with it. And I will tell you, like, the police are not what many of these people need. They need caregivers, they need people that have the right resources, people that have the time to spend with them, and that is exactly what this group does, and they do it really well, and we've seen an incredible impact. The other availability that they have is officers are routinely calling them to scenes where there is a crime, but the crime's been dealt with, and now it's about patient care and getting that individual the care that they need. And also on crisis calls, so the officers go because the person may have a knife. Then the officers de-escalate it, take the knife away, and resolve that part of it. They've been calling this unit then in to deal with the aftercare, finding the right doctor, finding the right care, finding the right what, to make sure that we get them on the best path to be successful. So this thing, and I'm just being really honest, this may be a little bold, being we're just a few months. I see this as the future. You're going to have ambulance services, you're going to have fire departments, you're going to have police departments, and then you're going to have mental health units like this that go to, one, back up other public safety units, but also to provide a high level of care for those suffering from mental illness. And I think it's working really, really well. 58% of these calls have been to the congregate living home. So, of course, this alternative response team responds to any call in Brooklyn Park is a mental health call that somebody needs some sort of assistance. And 58% of those are going to congregate care facilities. So again, 404 homes are consuming 58% of this team's response. The big goal that we're looking for in the future is we're trying to add in a second, because the gap here is mental health calls happen outside of 10 in the morning to 5 at night, Monday through Friday. Again, great pilot. But it's really telling me, if we look at the numbers, our high call volume for mental health calls are 7 days a week, 10 in the morning till 10 at night. That 12-hour period consumes about 85% of all mental health calls. So we are looking at ways to do that. But for today's conversation, that 58% is a big number. I mean, that is where they're going to spending a lot of their time. So I don't give it away in. So one of the things about community members are often wondering about licensing of group homes, often wondering like how they're regulated, why do they not feel like they're always regulated. And the truth is there's a lot of statutes that really require us to have them in a community. You can't essentially allow them or kick them out per se. Kim, anything you want to weigh in on this one?
No, it's just that the state says they're permitted uses in neighborhoods, and that's the primary thing to know.
So what authority does the city have? City has very little authority. We're just really open with residents about that. That's why we're working alternative ways to find resolutions to these. Brooklyn Park licensed rental units does apply to some of the properties. The City of Christ Rental licenses four group homes with services except certain types that are already licensed by the state. So that it's not that the city doesn't have some levers that they can pull on, but it's more along the lines of licensing. And then how many group homes are in Brooklyn Park? So out of the 404, there's 254 of them are licensed. I think some of them that fall kind of the categories that like the board and lodging are the youth shelters are a little bit unique. And then some of the questions we get about why don't we have city rental license for all of them. And there's a variety of reasons, but some of those are on the bottom with the corporate home offices, commercial areas, adult daycare, adult day services. Some are single units inside of apartment buildings. Some are just on license. We routinely find ones that are on license that should be, and we work through that. A few are owner occupied, which is an exception. And then there's just some exceptions per the state law, supervised living facilities and hospice care, etc. So kind of a variety of different things there that cause them not to be licensed by the city. So little over half of them are licensed. So that is a really, really quick overview of what can be a very complex topic. But I really thought today's conversation would be more about the questions that you all might have that we could answer. Or take direction of what you'd like to see the city go. With that, I'll pump the brakes and take any questions that you might have.
Mayor, can I just clarify one thing about the city license? The city license is a property maintenance license. So just to distinguish, the state and the county are licensing the operations, and we're only licensing as a rental property, which means we look at maintenance.
Thanks, Kim. So yeah, one of the issues that we that we've historically had is when we have repeat calls or what we really think is a lack of care for members that are in some of these facilities, and we think that they're being neglected or the proper care, lack of medication management when we see real behavior issues. We've had a really hard time addressing the licensing issue with the state that was really is kind of hands off. Since we've got these social workers embedded in our police department, we have been much more successful at that. They have been able to make contact with people that are just in better position to make arguments and get things done at the state level. And that's been really successful for us.
So just quickly before Councilmember Morrison, how much do we charge for that license?
I'll have to look up the fee. It's a standard most of these are single family properties, and so it'd be standard single family rental license fee. I can look it up and tell you in a minute. But there are some units within apartment buildings as well. So then they're just getting charged as an apartment building would get charged.
And what latitude do we have as a city to raise that licensing fee, or is that?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume we'd have to be uniform in our application of rental licensing fees. So we did just raise the fees this last budget cycle. So I can tell you what that is. We hadn't raised fees for a long time.
So we can have a special fee specifically for...
I would defer to the attorney. I would assume we couldn't given state law.
Okay. Now, the rental license fee is for the, like Kim said, make sure the property is maintained. It's not the use is already allowed. It's
gotcha.
Not the use that you're licensing. It's the rental of the property.
Thank you.
This is very, very dear to me. And my question to you, Chief, is when our officers are on the scene, the level of being disoriented, if that's the right word, of these mental these mentally challenged, if I can say that, people that's out there, does it rise to the level of what just happened to my niece for us to remove that person, individual, off the street? That's what my concern is. How do we assess that? Because if these people with the mental challenges that they face are walking the streets with such, whether or not it's off medication or depression and or life challenges that cause them to respond and act this way, I'm trying to see do we encounter such number or high numbers of those mental tenets that we have in our community?
Well, we certainly do. I mean, this is a little, maybe not directly related to these facilities, but a lot of the concerns that we have in crime and violent crime is what we call these gap cases. And we actually have one right now, to be honest with you, where a man shot another man down at Eden Park in the neck, almost killed him, went to stand trial, was found incompetent to stand trial, and then has been right back on the street dealing with guns and shooting people again. And that is actually a common theme. Like, the issue is when they go to get assessment, they're found to have severe mental illness or issues that keeps them from being able to be held accountable criminally, and then they go right back on the street. And that is where we call it the gap case is, I don't disagree that they got real mental illness, but they need to go to some sort of care facility and get the help that they need, and that is absolutely broken in our criminal justice system. And there's been actually quite a few really good stories on it that were done, and I know there's a lot of people, including Commissioner Lundy, who's very, very aware of it. It just doesn't seem like anybody's pulling the right levers to make a change.
Because that's what I've come to find is that even in that area, excuse me a little bit, but even in that area, it lacks the funding to support the needs of that community.
Yeah.
That's in that need. And we know that it's there, but the funding lacks to treat those patients. Yeah. But on the other hand, not treating them results in the tragedies that we face from school shootings or, you know.
The big issue, and you see a lot of those walkaways or missing persons from group homes, like none of these are locked facilities. So people will be assigned here, but they come and go. Like they'll go steal a car and be gone, and then we'll find them in Rochester, we'll bring them back, and then the 4 hours later they're gone again. And so I give you that piece of information because somewhere in, and I apologize, my history lessons can be horrible here, but maybe the 80s and 90s, there was a really significant Supreme Court case that said that locking up individuals with mental health, like in a St. Peter's type mental institution, if you will, was found to be cruel and unusual punishment. And so there was a huge philosophy change by Supreme Court rule that put a lot of these people that had been locked up in locked up facilities and put them out in communities in these group homes. And that's kind of where we're at across this entire state, to be honest with you. That really the existence of locked up facilities are so few and far between. Most of them have been closed. And again, it's created this gap case where, you know, at times it works, they get the treatment, and they're better off for it, but then there's times where they're not amenable to treatment and they're being put right back into the community to continue to victimize, and it's a real problem. That's a little off topic from these, but a lot of these do end up at these group home facilities.
I have an idea. I think we need to ask the legislator and refunding because we have misuse of funding for healthcare. The system is doing, and now we have a lot of elderly mental problem or youth or community, but the funding go to the state fund to a person, and then the healthcare corporation give it to me, the funding for the member, they are our member, so they took on the money, and then this person have you know, mental illness like that, you know, we don't have that kind of service, but they keep calling people, they try to use the fund inappropriately. You know, breast cancer check. They keep, you know, pushing people. They try to use the fund that way, but this person have no history of breast cancer or uterus cancer. They have a mental problem, but no, we don't have that kind of, and even the elderly who have orthopedic problem, neck pain or something, we don't have, you go home and take ibuprofen. So where's the money, the state, you know, fund, you took it. You said, this is my member, my member. What, whether healthcare, Fairview or Alina or Park Bullet, they took on the money the state give to that person, and then they use inappropriately. So we need the legislature fund, you know, in the way that it has to serve right purpose for that the person, not for the healthcare system.
Thank you.
And because I worked with the patient like 18 years, okay, I see that a lot.
The money needs to go to those patients and needs
yeah.
to be treated.
Yeah, it,
yeah, Erickson first.
I agree.
Thank you. So Councilmember Erickson?
I just have a point of clarification. Was this a just a point of information that the council had requested at some point?
Yeah.
Or do you chiefs have an ask for us?
No, it was just the previous council was extremely interested in it. There was a lot of community members really interested in it. So we have been just being real transparent with the council, get up to speed. And I think the city manager wanted this council to have the same information of kind of the status where we're at.
Okay. Councilmember Pinesi.
Thank you, Mayor. I
had an ask, or I guess a request of a question I brought to Jay regarding this after the ride-along with your firefighters. They talked about some safety concerns, things that they're seeing when they go in to help move somebody. They're finding people who are maybe immobile, put in rooms that are dangerous. So if there's a fire issue, it's very hard. And they're perhaps large people, you can't get them out safely. Along with mistreatment and coming into situations where your team felt they were seeing such obvious maltreatment of vulnerable adults. But I don't know that we have a very easy way for that to be reported, because as I saw with your team, they're busy. They have stuff to do. They are not just sitting there twiddling their thumbs looking. So I don't know if our city has any sort of reporting mechanism, like residents can report for the millions we get about sidewalks and things like that. If there's a quick and easy way, or for your team and your team, if they're seeing things that our staff can start keeping a case, and then perhaps that art team could be taking that when they're going to the state to say, look, this is a repeated offender. We have this, this, and that, and your teams are seeing it, or the neighborhood is seeing it, and could put in a complaint that we're tracking a case.
Yeah, I would just, and I'll let you go in a second. I would give, I guess the best way to describe it is with this mental health unit, which is, right, we kind of lead the industry in that. It's got four members of the detective, and now we have this alternate response. We're doing that work. Now, we're really building it while we fly it, to be honest with you, because this is just uncharted territory trying to figure out. But that's some of the success that we've had, because there's a plethora of issues at these group homes, but some of them is just lack of care. And I know that finding healthcare workers for these facilities is nearly impossible. And unfortunately, we've seen the back end of that where there's just lack of care. So somebody may be acting up, but they're off their medicine and nobody has been giving it to them for weeks on end, right? Like there's a neglecting care there. And that is today being handled better than it ever has before in our community, but not perfect. And you're absolutely right. We need to build a better, robust mechanism to do that work and then report it up. I think there's an element here, too, where the state is really overwhelmed. Like, this isn't just a Brooklyn Park. I know Bloomington is very frustrated about the resources consumption and the lack of care at the facilities and the lack of appropriate people. So, in other words, the qualifications of the medical provider who's watching over the facility is not equal to the level of care that needs to be had at the facility. So it's just complex, and your point is super valid, is kind of what I was going to say.
Fire Chief. Yeah. I'll echo that. You know, the challenge, I think, up until recently is not having that dedicated resource. And, I mean, we're in lockstep with the police. So, I mean, if we get a referral and it goes through to our chain of command, and, you know, the firefighters see something, and at the end of the day, they're also obligated reporters. They have to report something. So that does get, you know, reported through. And we've actually had very good success even before the alternate response unit working with the county, and we've done follow-up cases. And I think what Roy points out, which is an important part, is there is a staffing crisis. you know, throughout healthcare. It's starting. I think there may be a shimmer of light at the end of the tunnel, but there's a significant need in that space. One of the calls that we typically get called to is, well, call the fire department when someone falls and you need to help them get off the floor because they are, you know, I mean, even 100 and something pounds or 300 pounds. You know, we're getting those calls, and most fire departments are getting inundated with those lift assist type calls. They just don't have the right equipment, or to add the equipment, they just don't want to use it. And that's probably the more frustrating part for us, is that we end up in this kind of space that, you know, we can't really regulate it and we can refer it off, but I think the Chief Rulli's point, I think the state's so inundated that just goes along the bottom of the list as a lift assist. So we're trying to do, I've actually intervened on a couple of those cases and calling the property manager that we cannot continue to tie up, you know, a fire resource, an EMS resource, police resource for something that you're supposed to be providing to the client. Mm-hmm. I mean, just fundamental human services that we're trying to make sure that they provide. So I think Brooklyn Park is at the leading edge of trying to really address those problems with the alternative response unit and some of the other mental health resources. I don't know if you saw it today, but you know, the start trip on just the increased usage on the new three-digit mental health call. And I think that is just another example of just the mental health crisis that, you know, is there and it's real. I think we provide enough staff and enough resources on it, just answering that phone, just to provide, you know, resources to that. So I think we're just going to need to be, you know, we're going to be constantly flying and building at the same time because these things just don't exist. So I think we're on the right path, but it is, it's just a resource bear. And we were listening in the other room, I think at the Mayor Winston's point on, you know, we do have a lot more resource needs in this community. And those tie up, you know, police resources, fire resources, but those are truly the needs that we see in the community. You know, from police, fire, EMS providers, you know, we were limited in it, and now truly providing the right resource to the patient that needs it. Because getting a fire truck there and seeing three burly firefighters walk up on a mental health call isn't necessarily going to be providing the right resource either, right? So I think this is a really good opportunity for the future.
The other piece of this that bothers me, some of the earlier slides showing the for-profit model seems to be predominant here. And I know some of these folks, they're my neighbors, some of them who run group homes, and they are not hurting financially. I don't like that our city is on the hook for a lot of these needs that they're not, and it doesn't sound like it's in our control necessarily, but maybe that's something we need to be having higher conversations with, because that's just an undue burden for our city.
So Kim, you want to say something, and then Councilmember Lee, and then I'll say something, and then I want to start wrapping this piece up.
I just wanted to point out that handout has an actual call center that's set up for reporting abuse. So
for our city?
For the state.
Or for the state.
So it's on how to report a crime. So there's a Minnesota Adult Abuse Reporting Center, and I guess what I don't know is whether or not our staff are using it, and maybe that's a connection we should be making.
Everything goes in there because we want the numbers, we want the identification to the state, so we always have marked reports. And then, but really,
the residents can use it too. So
yeah,
people bring it up to you, refer them there.
And we do. I think we've had firefighters do it. We've had anybody like sea searchers. We have them do that report because it's the right mechanism to start the process. But where we really seen success is with the social workers making the call, going, there's a market report. It's in the hopper for you, but this is unacceptable. We have to do something. And we've actually gotten some movement, some change there. So
I know that I'll speak then Councilmember Lee and then Councilmember Tran, and then we should wrap it up after that. I know that some of the other, like you said, this is happening across the state. I went to a North Metro Mayor's meeting and they're having some issues with it. I cannot recall if it was New Hope or Crystal. They had an approach, and we had talked about it briefly, so maybe we can look into that approach. I know it pissed some people, upset one of our, I think, state senators, but maybe we need to look into that approach to see what's going on there. And I do think that not right now, but maybe we can come up with some type of strategy or approach, because to your point, folks are making money off of this thing, and then the city is having to help finance their profit, right? Which is an issue for me. As to see folks shaking their heads, so nodding their heads. So maybe that's something we can add to our docket of everything else we have. But I do think we need to look into what New Hope is doing, and then maybe there's even some best practices in other cities across the country, so that we can start getting ahead on this. And then maybe, I don't see a quick fix in a year or two, but maybe it's something we have to go to legislature and say, look, this is really, you know, affecting people. So how do we come up with some legislation that gives a little bit more control to the city? So Councilmember Lee, and then Councilmember Trant, Councilmember Morrison after that, but we're supposed to be wrapping this up. I know everybody wants to get their piece up, and if we could wrap this up so we can get to the other portion of it. And one other thing, I think at the beginning of this new council, we said we were going to do everything in our power to make these meetings more efficient. So if we could do that, I think city staff and residents and everybody else would appreciate that. So, Councilmember Lee.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just going to talk about that part as well. Just, you know, that I understand, like, the shortage that they might, you know, that healthcare has in particular right now, but their business model is taking care of people, you know. And so, I mean, if another business, like a store, you know, like was calling our emergency people to go and help stock their shelves or put up, a building or something, you know, I mean, like, are there specific certain instances where we charge or we bill for that kind of going out?
We have not historically. There is some track record in cities. I don't know about in metro, but more outstate charging different services. Fire service is one.
Yeah, we've seen it in some areas. Some communities have looked at like charging for lift assist. What I can tell you, people get very creative when they call 911. You know, and it's lift assist, but I think they're also having difficulty breathing. You know, so we have an obligation like to go to the call. So that's where it kind of becomes that tricky piece, and it really doesn't get to the root of the issue. So, I think, based on like this discussion, we're all, I think, in agreement, like, don't try to figure out like the root of that issue, and, you know, how do we, because I've seen a lot of creative things. That's usually what, unfortunately, it leads to. And I wish I could say something different.
But that's my idea, and then we just got to keep working at the state level.
Yeah. Councilmember Trent?
Is this Minnesota Adult Abuse same with the HAP disability? Or?
I'm not familiar with that.
Because we've been told like any issue regarding elderly, abuse, you call HAP. I've been calling a number of times for the case that I witnessed elderly abuse in nursing home and hospital, and all they do is the letter sent to you, yeah, we receive your case, and then thank you for reaching out to us, but we do not do anything.
I think the hub is usually a county thing. I think the hub is usually a county level thing. Yeah. It's like it's centralized by state.
So I would try this one.
Definitely. That one actually is where mandatory reporters can report, where that comes back to the police department, gets assigned an investigator, goes in for criminal charges, and if not, it gets moved on for, like, you know, different civil level intervention as far as trying to find if it's the right caregiver, et cetera, if there's other violations. But we actually look at that through the first lens as a criminal investigation. And we get many, many MARC reports a week that we investigate. So, yeah, that's the one you want to call because every one of them gets looked into.
Councilmember Morrison.
I just want to say that this is really important to me, and I wouldn't be doing my niece any justice if I didn't put this where it needs to be put. Everything that was conversated here, we all know that is underfunded. And us at this table, we not the legislators that make that happen. They find THC or marijuana more important than mental health. And what is the cost of me losing my niece because you want to raise that issue? I was one of the council members that wanted to talk about this last council session, and not knowing that my niece would be succumb to the mental health challenges that this man was facing. And I learned that his family knew that he was having the challenges, but they didn't report it. So as a result of them not stepping up to get their family member some help, and the state is not making that a priority, my 19-year-old niece lost her life. Somebody just walked into a building and just began shooting because of where he was at in his life without any help. So I refuse to remain silent on especially something like this, because it hit me at home, at my home, my niece, 19 years old. So funding this, lifting up our voices to those legislators who was elected to do those things, we need to begin to hold those accountable for what they're not doing. I would definitely do that, whatever I have to do, because I think I'm still representing and honoring my niece. And it just, I just wanted to say that, just put my voice out there to let my niece know that I'm still trying to raise the conversation. Because her death wasn't ignored or taken in vain, nor is it those churches or those elementary schools or any of those other schools that people walk in there and they have these mental challenges that family members are aware of, but yet refuse to share that information. So, but thank you very much.
So I will say, I don't know if we aim that at you, but I think we're going to want to, begin revisiting this. And I know this is not a quick fix, but what's happening in New Hope? What are some best practices across the country to address this? And then longer term, what coalition can we fit into if work is being done, or do we have to take lead on this too? To address reforms. I know it's in the ether, but I think those are things that we're going to have to, I don't think we have to revisit next month, but we do need to have a running discussion and start making progress on addressing these issues. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so the next topic is going to be the senior meeting discussion. Yeah, one more thing.
She's leaving. She's out of here.
Here we go.
She's going on.
Yeah, so we got one more item. We got.
We have the last item because we got the complaint about the senior summit that. See, they even don't have this person, senior, $10 meal for a program that the city make an event for senior, and the senior have to pay from their pocket, and the resident, they complain why the city don't have that money for a senior program. So now we want to vote to ask the planning department put some money aside to search our resident senior in our resident. So we look like we focus too much the crime and the youth and the disease. We focus too much on the family and youth program. We spending like $1 million for safety, public safety, then we forgot about our senior.
So quickly, first I want to say, Boyd, you know, my sincere condolences on your loss. I know we haven't really touched on it. I'm sensitive to bringing that up, unless it's brought to me. But I want to say my sincere condolences, because I can't imagine. I can't really fathom it. So my condolences. I just can't imagine. So pivoting back, Councilmember Tran, I believe what's on the agenda is a senior meeting discussion, not specifically a vote to allocate. So I think we can flesh that out a little bit. There's some understanding around that, but I think we have to give the council some time to consider that and to have, you know, kind of have the facts in front of them. And the reality is, if we begin allocating things, that gets into a larger budget discussion and get into that process overall.
Yeah.
So I do think we can flesh that out as a council for a limited time today, just considering time and everything. I know it's important, but I wanted to just level set that part of the discussion right now that we'll discuss, see if we need any further information and understand the process for that. And then in another council meeting, if we continue to move in that direction, then we can pursue that process.
I agree. At least some thousand right now, because $470 for a senior meal, we don't have. That is an unbalanced budget, because we pay million here, million there. How could we not have just, you know, 10,000, 5,000 to serve our senior, because they work all their life, they pay tax. That's how we have the city nowadays. And now we don't just appreciate elderly just on the elderly day, senior day. We have to think of them like every day. Like.
So I know Council Member Klonowski had raised her hand, and then Council Member Lee.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't know if everyone got the call. There was a gentleman that called and expressed discontent because he sees all the flyers coming out, and there's these many, many events that have pizza or food, and people are encouraged to take home food, and that's great, it's wonderful. His thing was, I love that, I want to keep doing it, but it's offensive that you invite these seniors in, you don't provide any option for transportation, and then you make them pay $10 to have lunch. I think the optics of that are pretty obvious. It's not great. But there are questions probably to ask first, which is, you know, is that under a different department than all the pizza and safety discussions happening in other parts of the community? What's the budget that we put for the senior residents? And, you know, could we do better in the future to not misstep like that? Because I do think that's a very valid concern. A lot of seniors are on limited budgets, fixed incomes, and we should be taking that into consideration.
So, Councilmember Lee?
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Everyone knows the budget is tight, right? But each department does have certain funds for, like, event spending, you know, whether that be food or materials or whatever. I think it's a valid point. I've got some emails. I haven't gotten a phone call, but just like how we're trying to focus on, like, youth services and youth access to activities and things, I think maybe for this one particular topic in terms of fees, senior fees for events and things, if there's room, I don't know if it's something we could do over the course of this year, but maybe looking into the next budget cycle, you know, if there's like an estimate of, like, oh, this is our senior activities for the year, and we would need this amount of money to cover those fees for speakers or for performers or for food even, you know, Could we then take a look at, oh, let's maybe try to move some money over towards the senior programming, whether it's Rec and Parks or whether it's a partnership with police or, for our security sessions or workshops, like all of our senior programming. So I think that's valid. Obviously, I would support that movement of our funds to support trying to keep all of our senior programming fee-less.
Well, Councilmember Lee, the resident was speaking about, there was a meal being provided at the program, and they had to pay for the meal.
Right.
And then they're seeing all this stuff about free meals and pizza and take food with you. So I don't know that there was a fee for the program. You could come and not have the meal and then not pay. But it was just that perception. She obviously got a phone call too.
Yeah.
I didn't get the call. No. I think I know why, but. I would say I don't know that I'm opposed. I would want to see more context and more information. It was odd to me that, when it came to the Black History Month event, this is where it kind of suddenly got a little more aggressive in terms of, hey, this isn't fair. I don't know why that stuff tends to pop up around Black History Month or other months of color, but. I think there was, just talking to some staff, there's a little bit of context that needs to inform that. Nevertheless, I think we can take a look at take a look at it in context, get some more information about what the costs will be, what maybe specifically it would go towards, and why. I think it's kind of. I get it, it pulls at people's heartstrings, but I also have this larger concern of, as we ramp up investment in some of this, in youth programming and violence interruption and some other things that we're going to be taking on, those are pressing priorities that are going to have ripple effects at a huge level across the city. And so, fiscally, I'm trying to understand, even though it may sound like a small amount, fiscally, I just want to make sure that we are not going to be putting ourselves in a position by entertaining all these different offers where 2 years from now, we've bitten off more than we can chew. So I would want to have more understanding around that, what programs it would go to, what that specific cost is, what is the reasoning behind it. I think that's going to be important because everything we do, especially as new council, we're going to be setting precedent, right? And so while there is an ROI in terms of we value our elders, some of these other things that we're considering around youth is there's an ROI in that we value our youth, but it's also going to be driving down crime for generations, right? So I just want to look at it from that lens, and I think we need more information to be able to do that. So. That would be my piece, and I think I guess Latonya, like, what is? You probably say, why are you calling me right now? But I'm
I'm trying.
So, but what is the process if we're going to continue? If we're going to consider allocating something. That we haven't really budgeted for, or something like that. What's generally the process for doing that?
So normally we don't just have a phone, mayor, council members. We don't typically just have a process for doing that, besides that if you wanted to do something like that, then we would have to bring something to you in order to get appropriation in order to be able to do that. We can't just do it on our own, meaning if it's over and above what we already have in the budget. We're already doing a lot of, and the reason why I say it that way is because within our budgets, we have to fund some things within our existing budget that we wasn't even planning on, not that we wasn't planning on it, but it wasn't already in the budget. So you could, say that you want to move some dollars from another area and put it towards this particular initiative, but you would have to make that request. We do have contingency funds that you can do that from. Like, when I say you, you probably give a directive to staff. We would write up the RSC and the resolution, and then council will vote on.
All right, and so then my other thing would be, I think we would have to look at all the programming out there for seniors and say, what's the cost for that, right? Yeah.
You would give staff that direction.
So we would have staff, so would that be you, Dr. Smith?
Yeah.
Okay, so we would have to look at all of that. So maybe we can start there. We can look at the senior program, pre-programming that we currently have. And then we can bring that to either another work session or a meeting, and we can kind of look through that to understand all of that, all of the programming that's out there. Because it may make more sense to say, for specific programs, we're willing to allocate X amount of dollars for this, or we want to consider this program versus everything. Because, like I said, my concern, and you guys can push back on this, right, is that 2 months in, we're establishing precedents. So once we do this, we could continue to get these, you know, type of requests. That's all. So I want to be kind of diligent in terms of how we approach it.
And what I'm going to add to that, too, is my understanding in this particular situation is that there was an option that you couldn't afford it. I don't know if that's the correct one.
Yeah.
Which, that if you couldn't afford it, you could say that, you know, you wasn't going to pay the $10 and you still would have been able to enjoy a meal.
That was after a complaint, I think.
Yep.
That came after a resident complaint, I thought.
No.
Oh, okay.
Didn't understand that it existed.
Got it.
And didn't like that it wasn't in the advertisement.
Got
but it always exists. And almost, I don't know that we have a program that doesn't exist. Anything that runs through our rec track program, is that right?
Yeah, all of our change that we made a couple years ago with our fee assistance program is now it's available to older adults as well. It used to be capped, you know, under 18, but now it's older adults as well. So we do have that available. It's not something everybody takes advantage of, or is, you know, but yeah, that's an opportunity for them for this event, but also for some of our other events. But there are some programs that we run that are really individual benefit only, like senior trips to the casino, right? We don't offer fee assistance.
When is that?
You're not old enough.
I think they need security.
But those, for instance, that it's a directly a personal benefit, you know, like that type of. But we have a tier that I'd be happy to share with the council. We have, you know, kind of an approach to all of our fees and our costs, and really weighing out that, you know, kind of broader community benefit to the really direct personal benefit. And that, like I mentioned, the senior programming, golf lessons, you know, things like that, that there's just not fee assistance necessarily available for those items.
Why didn't we advertise it on the flyer?
To be honest with you, this was really an impromptu event by a bunch of really overachieving employees that were taking on more than way outside what they needed to, but they had conjured up between police and fire and park and rec about having a senior safety day. And so they carved out the space. They knew they had the interest through community members, and so they started advertising it. They had 47 people sign up in like 4 days. And so it was really impromptu, and we run everything through the rec track program. And so that has generally been our equitable way to make sure that people have equal access to it. So just because you don't have funds, you can still participate. And that's why we use that system. So even if we're running it, we try to run everything through Brad's Rec Track. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's our registration software.
And that is what really mines out if they need assistance, they can get it through there. So probably just culturally, we don't normally just call that out in the advertisement. And in this case, it was a little like, hey guys, get together, what do you think about this? And police, fire, and park and rec are like, yeah, we could hold this event. Seniors could really benefit from it, and that's why they did it. So we did, after the one complaint, we did then re-advertise it with that information on there that I think we usually title like special grants available for assistance to this programming. But
No good deed goes.
So
I think, Dr. Smith, if we could have all of that put together, including if we can get that tiered system as well, then I think we can consider it in another. I don't think we should bring it right before council in a work session. We can consider it. But then the last thing I'll say, I think we can kind of close this out, is that as we get these things on board, remember, I would caution people to remember that we were in this meeting, which we didn't really run fat, we didn't go off the rails too much. We're coming out around 9 o'clock probably. And so anything that we consider that we have to add to that is gonna add to that time. While we still have to work through this zoning and some of this other youth stuff, it's some very pressing things. So, you know, we just keep that in mind, because we have over the next 6 months, that's going to be a heavy task in terms of the work sessions, is getting through that zoning, that the moratorium, the zoning piece, all of that stuff is going to be a heavy lift. So, but any other?
I just want to add that maybe if we put in the part, I was part of the council that approved the new fees and those types of things. So my thinking is maybe if we just put that in a park agent to advertise that exists, that fee structure, or less fee structure, however we do it, so people can read the note that that's there. If we so happen to miss it next time, it should be in the park pages to let people become aware that there is a sliding scale system. I got a headache all of a sudden. But I just believe that if we made that known and available to our residents, everybody would be aware of that exists, so we wouldn't have to go back to this and revisit this. That's just my thinking, if we made it public. If we put it on, I don't know if it's on the website or not, but if we put it on the website and put it in the park pages and let our residents know that there's a sliding scale for if you can afford it or not afford it, you know, I just think it's something that we should be publicizing. Excuse me, but I got a headache.
I hate to hear it. Brad.
Yeah, just to Councilmember Morris's point, we do, it's in the, you know, park pages insert now has the recreation information in it. It is mentioned in there. You know, the fee assistance piece is mentioned in there, but perhaps we do an article, you know, in the park pages part, the magazine part, if you will, but do a small article about the availability of that. So,
Councilmember, your point about like better advertisement, and we should be better about that, putting on the flyer, just as if, I mean, that's who we are, about making sure that we have easy access and to everyone that wants to use our programming or whatnot. I will tell you, this individual that I spoke to about this issue, he was definitely beyond that was not satisfactory to him, that there was an opportunity for assistance. He was very frustrated that programming should be free, because he's seen other events, like with kids carrying boxes of pizza, which we do, like there's food left over, we do give it away. And for me and my staff, I mean, we really, to be honest with you, spend 95% of our time trying to target those most in need, that most have the most mistrust in police and can use the most connectivity, right, relationship building. And so in those cases, I tell staff, like, yeah, give the food away. Like, and a lot of times food gets the people to show up. Mm-hmm. And so we leverage that as a tool. But we also express this to that individual that, you know, we garner a ton of community funds for our, like, our police athletic leagues, for everything that we do with our community outreach. And that's all community funds that corporations in this community have said, hey, here's $10,000, take the kids fishing. Here's $5,000, please, like, do events with police and kids events and pay for food. So that money is literally earmarked with, yeah, sorry, I'm using that term, you got me on it now, yeah. Earmarked for specifically buying foods or kid programming, youth programming. So that's one of those deals where he sees that, but that's exactly what Luther Brookdale gave the money to do. Mm-hmm. And so we're really being respectful of how that money was donated and what it was donated for. So I just offer that small lens of, it's kind of a bigger conversation.
You know,
yeah.
That need to be, that person need to be explained, because he, with his complaint, he keep looking into CT funding program, and then he was for the council meeting every every week, and he kept, you know, escalating like resentment. Why the city funding program that don't have fund for a senior, million here, million there, and after my complaint, 2-3 times writing, council meeting never talk about that.
Yeah. And I would say, just in wrapping this up, right, I think that's some of the context that we need, is that we are a community, so we want to respect our community as much as possible, but if funds are being given for this for a strategic reason, then there's a strategy behind it, right? And so if you don't get to, I'm not comfortable allowing someone to use that strategy, that strategic purpose against us, right? And, because we do have issues with trust between certain communities, and we're establishing that trust. And that's where the context was missing, and that's also why that individual didn't call me, because they probably know by now, I would say, is it strategic? Why is it this particular event that you have an issue with? Because you have an issue with that event, you might have an issue with me, right? So I think we have to have that context when we have that work meeting. But I think our chief's explanation of where the funding comes from, I would tell that particular individual, since they have a lot of time, I would say, you feel free to go out to some of these corporations and get them to donate to programs that you care about, right? And then we'll turn around and we'll use that for the programs that you want. You want to be a super volunteer, I'm all for it. You can get the money to do it, and we're happy to spend it for you, right? We're happy to spend your time, and we're happy to spend the money that comes with the time if you can raise it. So that would be my explanation to him, but I think we can get more into it when we have the work session.
We have Toyota, Subaru, and Brooklyn Park. We just come to them and said, can you donate some money? We want to have something for everybody.
Actually, you're being told absolutely not. You cannot go out and solicit funds. Us as elected, you as an elected official, and me as a staff. He has nonprofits that's doing that for him.
So he can reach out to all those folks and make it happen. So it's a project for us, you know. Keep it busy. I'm all for it. The more volunteers we get, the more exciting the city becomes.
Sorry, one last thing that just popped into my mind is, and I don't know if Dr. Davis is working on this yet, but it would be something like a ready report card. And, how much money is the city putting towards, you know, ready initiatives, youth initiatives, you know, senior initiatives, accessibility initiatives, you know, I would even put group homes, you know, under that, in terms of, you know, what are the, you know, so kind of like, yeah, kind of like a report card on how we're using our funds to support not just our vision, the 2025 vision, but also like the values, specifically when it comes to racial equity, diversity, and inclusion.
Yeah.
Agree.
All right.
I just want to say thank you, Mayor, for your kind words, and all of you that has approached me and my family and shared the same thing. I just want to say that to you all. Truly appreciate you guys very much for your kind words.
Again, my condolences. All right, so any council member reports and announcements?
Well, I don't have a lot to say because I actually showed up late, but Senator Pa, Rep Bang, and Rep Nelson had a town hall this past Saturday. Bits and pieces of it is on Facebook, but I heard from a lot of people that it was a really great conversation. They reported on, you know, everything that they're working on. There was a lot of people there, which is good, because previously, the ones I've been to haven't had a lot of people, so I think it just goes to show that, you know, there's a lot of engagement this year, and that's really good to hear. So, I should have played. It was good, and again, that just continues to emphasize that we need to continue to kind of, you know, push our legislative agenda as much as we can and continue to work with our representatives. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Did you have anything? Councilmember Trent? All right. I don't have anything.
I thought I'd go that day. There's something
said on the
next
question. So I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. So meeting adjourned. All right.
How are you doing?
I just got something.
Oops, sorry.
Get out of the way.
No.